And now on BBC Radio 3, it's time for this weekend's dedicated hour of early music. It's presented by Lucy Skeeping, who's marking the 400th anniversary of the birth of an intriguing Italian composer.
Hello, and thanks for joining me. You don't hear the name Antonio Cesti very much these days in concert halls or opera houses, but back in the mid-17th century, according to the critic Charles Burney, he was the most celebrated Italian musician of his generation and in great demand by Europe's rich and powerful. So today I'm going to be looking at Cesti's relatively short life and, of course, sharing with you some of his lovely music. The opening sinfonia to Antonio Cesti's opera Largia, first staged in the Court Theatre at Innsbruck in 1655, in the presence of Queen Christina of Sweden, who'd stopped off at the palace on her way to exile in Rome. Actually, it was said that her visit almost ruined the already financially challenged Archduke of Austria. But for 32-year-old Cesti, having his opera performed at such a grand occasion must have been a nice little career boost. But what about the start of his life? Well, he was born in Tuscany, in Arezzo, which was known as the City of Gold and High Fashion. It was home to lots of painters and poets of the Renaissance. So perhaps it's not surprising that Cesti, a talented young singer and organist, was drawn to a career in the arts. When he was 14, he joined a Franciscan monastery in nearby Volterra, a walled mountaintop town that was under the control of the powerful Medici family. And the sacred music he wrote for the priory must have made quite an impression on the Medicis, because it was they who encouraged him to have a go at writing pieces on more secular themes.
Thank you.
René Jacobs and Concerto Vocale with Mia Tirana by Antonio Cesti, a cantata probably written while he was a friar in the Tuscan town of Volterra in the late 1630s. So the Medici family, who controlled the whole region, were impressed by Cesti's talent and encouraged him to expand his musical horizons towards the court and the theatre. But as you can imagine, this didn't go down too well with the monastic authorities. He was officially reprimanded, and a year later, he hung up his friar's robes and swapped a life of prayer and contemplation for the glitz and glamour of the Venice Opera. And the following year, when he took a job on the music staff of the Archduke of Austria's court in Innsbruck, his career really began to take off.
Oh. veleno. Forse i ferri, i veleni mancheranno al mio regno per porre altrui la vita e a me lo sdegno. Sì, sì, mora Selino, uccidassi l'orispe per all'empio lenone delle vergogne mie. E prima che fugga il dì di tre vittime infami scorgi nel suolo immondo il sangue abominoso. Quindi m'appelli il mondo prima giusto re che genitor pietoso.
Laurent Nauri was the baritone in that aria from Antonio Cesti's opera L'Agia, first staged in 1655 at the Ducal Court in Innsbruck. Cesti's next show for Innsbruck was Orontea, which would become one of the most popular Italian operas of the 17th century. Apparently even Samuel Pepys owned a copy of the score. Mind you, like so many operas of this Baroque period, the plot is pretty unfathomable. A sequence of ludicrous twists and turns of love, jealousy, kidnap and marriage, largely involving Orontea, the Queen of Egypt, and a young painter called Alidoro. And who played Alidoro in the first performance? Well, it was none other than Antonio Cesti himself. So let's hear a little sequence from the opera, starting with the one aria from Cesti's whole output that really has stood the test of time. This is Natalie Stutzman with the beautifully sensual Intorno all'idol mio. Around my idol breathe winds sweet and gracious, kiss him for me, courtly breezes. Thank you. The soprano Raquel Andueza with the aria Dormi Ben Mio from Antonio Cesti's huge operatic success of 1656, Orontea. Before it, you also heard Francesca Lombardi Mazzulli with the aria Vieni all'idoro and contralto Natalie Stutzmann with what today has become Cesti's most famous aria, Intorno all'idol mio. Cesti was now on a roll, and his next big hit came less than a year later. His opera La Dori, or The Royal Slave, was premiered at the Innsbruck Court, and his employer, the Archduke Ferdinand, was delighted with it. Set in Babylon on the shores of the Euphrates, it's a tale of mistaken identities. A woman disguised as a man who eventually regains her lost lover, and a man disguised as a woman who causes another man to fall in love with him. Standard stuff. Anyway, here's the opera's opening sinfonia, followed by a duet from Act One called If Treacherous Love, sung by the characters Arsinoe and Tolomeo. Music from Cesti's opera La Dori in that 2021 recording by Accademia Bizantina. You're listening to the Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3. I'm Lucy Skeeping, and today we're exploring the life and music of the man that Charles Burney described as the most celebrated Italian musician of his generation, Antonio Cesti. To put him in context, Cesti was roughly contemporary with musicians such as Louis Couperin in France, Matthew Locke in England, and Barbara Strozzi in Italy. And these great operatic successes he was having in Austria came just 4 or 5 years after the restoration of the monarchy in England. There were 2 more big successes in Innsbruck before Cesti returned to his native Tuscany to take up a job in one of the Medici's many establishments in Florence. And then suddenly in 1660, he returned to his religious roots by accepting a position in the papal chapel in Rome, where for the next 4 years he concentrated once more on composing music for the church. The next sighting we have of him is staging a new opera in Venice in February 1666, in other words, carnival time. I have to say, it does seem unlikely that the Vatican would have approved of one of its employees writing music for a festival which, let's face it, was associated with excess and debauchery. So it's quite possible that Cesti had already left the Pope's service by then, although whether it was by mutual consent or under a bit of a cloud, we may never know. The opera for Venice was called Il Tito, based on the tale of the Roman Emperor Titus and his love affair with the Jewish princess Berenice. Here's an aria from it. This is Ian Bostridge with Cappella Neapolitana. Berenice, why are you hiding, light of my eyes? With ruthless wickedness, quick as a flash, she takes refuge with her new lover while I am torn apart.
Dite dov'è.
dite dov'è, 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 dite dov'è. Palesate il mio sol, l'ingegna conscia di sue lascivie e dei miei torti, rapida qual balena si è ricobrata al nuovo amante in sé. Furor armatevi, tutto ingombratevi di sigio ardor. Catasina, inacerata, l'empia spittata, l'empia spittata, chi già rapirmi con l'alma il col. Furor armatevi, tutto ingombratevi di sigio ardor. Oh, Lord, and candore.
risate il mio sol, dite dove, dite dove, dove, dove.
Where are you, my Berenice, sings the Emperor Tito in that plaintive aria from Antonio Cesti's opera Il Tito, first staged during the Venice Carnival of 1666. Well, there's one more instalment of Cesti's life to unpack, but before we take him off to Vienna, let's hear from Mark Siao and this week's Early Music News.
Thanks, Lucy, in today's news. Johann Sebastian Bach's cantata Christlag in Todesbanden is considered one of his earliest church cantatas, written when he was in his early 20s. But the latest research from the musicologist Daniel Melamed claims that we've got it wrong, and that Bach's cantata is actually from the following decade.
When he could, he turned to older church cantata that he had already composed and reused them. Now, one of the pieces he used was Christlag in Todesbanden, an Easter piece, now one of his most famous cantatas. One of the things about Christlag in Todesbanden that seemed to make it really old is its text, which consists of just the stanzas of a famous hymn by Martin Luther. There's no scriptural text, and especially there's no newly written poetry designed to be set as modern recitatives and arias. Between this affective response to the text and the modern musical organization of these movements, these are surprisingly modern pieces. That is, pieces based on an old-fashioned model, but using a much more up-to-date language.
Professor Daniel Melamed. From Germany, across the border to 17th century France, to the composer Henri Grenemann, who was a crucial figure in the guitar becoming a fashionable instrument beyond the royal court. Today, he's largely forgotten as a composer, but hopefully not for much longer. The guitarist Bruno Hellstroffer has recorded L'Âme Sans, the very first commercial recording devoted to Grenemann's music.
To me, the music left by Henry gives us a new approach of music for baroque guitar. It's imbued of French lute style, close to the great lutenist from the beginning of the 17th century in Paris, as Vieux Gautier, Mouton, etc. A music of intimacy, full of wisdom and quietness. We can feel that Henry is older than Robert de Vizet or Corbetta, which are more powerful, with a lot of strummed chords. It is a very interesting new point of view on baroque guitar, far from the current stereotypes.
The guitarist Bruno Hellstroffer there, whose album L'Âme Sans on the Alpha label is out later this month. And a Radio 4 highlight coming up this week. I'm presenting Eastern Classical with guests Masaki Suzuki and David Chin. We'll be delving into Bach performance in Japan and Malaysia. That's Eastern Classical this Tuesday, the 15th of August, over on BBC Radio 4. And that's your early music news.
Thanks, Mark. And there'll be more early music news next week. So we were just celebrating the 1666 Venice Carnival with Antonio Cesti. And it was shortly after that that he moved, lock, stock and barrel, onto Vienna to become a musician at the court of the Holy Roman Emperor Leopold I. The Emperor was quite a few years younger than Cesti. So perhaps he'd seen some of his operas as he was growing up, or maybe he just wanted to show the rest of the world that he could afford to employ this greatly celebrated musician at his court. But either way, Cesti's arrival coincided with the young emperor's marriage to Margaret, daughter of the King of Spain. And what better wedding present than a new opera? Cesti called it Il Pomodoro, the Golden Apple. But it turned out to be such an ambitious project that it was another 2 years before it was actually ready to be performed, just in time to mark the Empress's 17th birthday instead. In fact, Il Pomodoro has gone down in history as one of the most lavish productions ever staged at the time. It needed a huge orchestra, massive choruses, no less than 24 different sets, and all sorts of mechanical machinery for special effects, things like naval battles, storms, shipwrecks, collapsing towers, and gods descending from the heavens. And what's more, in the end, the show turned out to be so long that it had to be staged over the course of 2 days. So what delights did the audience actually get in this marathon production? Well, the plot concerns sort of beauty contests. The gods ask the Trojan prince Paris to decide which of the goddesses, Venus, Juno or Pallas, is the most beautiful and therefore deserving of the golden apple of discord. When Paris gives the prize to Venus, the spurned goddesses try to get their revenge until Jupiter comes to the rescue, turns to the audience and awards the golden apple to the birthday girl, the Empress Margaret Theresa. Very diplomatic. The soprano Francesca Aspromonte with that aria from Antonio Cesti's enormously ambitious opera, The Golden Apple, which, after a bit of a hold-up, was finally staged in 1668 in Vienna to celebrate the 17th birthday of the Holy Roman Empress Margaret Theresa. And who were the orchestra on that recording? Well, when the musicians first got together back in 2012, they were so intrigued by the opera, its lavishness, the visual effects and so on, that they called themselves after it, Il Pomodoro. For Cesti, though, the opera's great success in Vienna was sadly to be almost his last. There was one more production with his name attached to it, the opera Ginserico, which was apparently staged in Venice the following year, although we don't know if he ever saw it performed, because it's thought he may have been working on it when he died, suddenly, at the age of 46, and it was probably completed by another composer. Who knows where Cesti's talents and ambition might have taken him had he lived longer. But from what we've heard today, it sounds like Charles Burney was right in calling him the most celebrated Italian musician of his day.
Today's Early Music Show was presented by Lucy Skeeping with the news bulletin from Mark Seow. It was produced in Salford by Les Pratt. And next week's programme will be back at the usual time of 2 o'clock. Lucy Skeeping will be back then too with highlights of a concert given by the Czech Ensemble Baroque in Prague.
BBC Radio 3, the home of the BBC Proms.
A weekend for everyone with the Budapest Festival Orchestra. A great romantic piano concerto and an atmospheric symphony. An afternoon of music selected by the audience and an evening ranging from the macabre to the exquisite. The Budapest Festival Orchestra at the BBC Proms continues this afternoon at 2, live on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio, BBC Sounds, and on most smart speakers, just ask for BBC Radio 3. It's 1 o'clock and time for the news, read by me, Jane Royce. The Hawaiian authorities say the number of people killed by wildfires on the island of Maui has risen to 93. That makes them the most deadly to hit the United States in more than a century. Rescuers expect the number of casualties to rise in the coming days, as they've only been able to search 3% of the area devastated by the flames. The state's governor has begun a review of the response to the fires after officials were criticised for not doing enough to warn residents. The government says it's done a lot of work to stop migrants crossing the channel in small boats. 6 people died yesterday when one boat sank near the French coast. Labour has described the Home Office's response to the crossings as completely incompetent. The former Conservative Party chairman, Sir Jake Berry, said the UK had a moral duty to act. The Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, says he's open to requests for patients from Wales and Scotland to be treated on the NHS in England. He's invited health leaders from the devolved nations for talks on how best to tackle waiting lists. He claims the devolved governments have longer waiting lists in some cases. Both the Scottish and Welsh governments have disputed this. Iran's parliament has voted to review a new bill that enforces the wearing of the hijab without any public debate. MPs could approve its experimental implementation for between 3 and 5 years. The so-called hijab and chastity bill is intended to ensure mandatory wearing of the hijab by women, following mass protests last year sparked by the death of a young woman in police custody. Authorities in the Chinese province of Shanxi say the number of people killed in a mudslide has risen to 21. 6 others are still missing. The mudslide near Xi'an was triggered by torrential rain. The Ministry of Defence says there's a realistic possibility the Russian government is no longer funding the Wagner mercenary group. It believes the force is now downsizing to cut staffing costs. Wagner's leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, led a mutiny against senior Russian military figures in June. The Education Secretary, Gillian Keegan, says this year's A-level results are expected to be lower than last year, as marking returns to normal after the pandemic. Students will receive their grades later this week. Universities have been told to expect results to be similar to those achieved in 2019. And the weather, it'll be an unsettled afternoon with cloud and showers across most of the UK. It should be brighter in the south and east of England. A band of rain will push into Wales and the southeast, southwest of England later. BBC News and weather, it's 3 minutes past one. Well, it's time now on BBC Radio 3 and BBC Sounds for Choral Evensong